Welcome. My name is Ned Pyle. I'm the program manager for a brand new feature in Windows Server VNext called Storage Replica. Are we going to close the doors at some point here? It's pretty loud. Okay. Let's start talking about me immediately. That's me. I work on the file server and cluster team. I work in Redmond, Washington, in the United States, right over there. I live in Seattle, right over there. I go across this demon bridge tollway every morning. I've been all over the world doing presentations for Microsoft and before Microsoft, North America, Australia, South America, Europe. I have not been to Africa yet, India. I even got married in Scotland a long time ago, where you start drinking immediately after the ceremony. I mean immediately. That was 5 minutes after I signed the paperwork. The Scottish people here are nodding their heads. I worked for Microsoft for 8 years before becoming a program manager. I worked in support. I worked in IT before that, so at some point I actually had a real job like you guys. I was in the infantry. And I am doing all this to tell you all this because I am now the storage replication program manager guy. If you have a question about DFSR, FRS, or storage replica, I'm your guy. I created this thing called AskDS years ago that some of you have read if you work on any Active Directory stuff, and I own the FileCab blog, and that's me. So I am the storage replica guy, and I am this blogs, and if you want to find me, that's how you find me. And if you email me, I'll be very likely to answer your email. I will read it. I guarantee you I will read it. Okay. So we're here today to talk about storage replica, and storage replica is a feature that exists because of disasters. And being from the United States, we know all about disasters thanks to Hollywood. So here's my disaster, giant attack gorilla taking out London, throwing buses around. Now, our real disasters are things like, on the left, that is the Verizon Manhattan data center in downtown Manhattan after Hurricane Sandy. That's the lobby. All the cables and servers and stuff were in the basement. So they had tons of clusters, didn't help. So they're all submerged clusters. And you can see the storm here. If I had been replicating, you know, if I'd had stuff maybe next door or across the street, that storm goes from Atlantic City all the way to Chicago. So a single data center, 99.9% of the time is all you're going to need, but that 0.1 where you get to stay in business is where I step in. This is what storage replica does. It is block level, volume-based synchronous replication. It uses SMB3 as a transport. You've probably seen presentations throughout the week where we talk about SMB3 as kind of our go-to protocol now. We're using it for everything, and I mean everything, because it's super fast and scalable and reliable and awesome. This kind of gives you a lot of flexibility. Storage replica works at the volume level. It doesn't care what your storage is. He likes iSCSI, Fiber Channel, JBOD, local disk. As long as it's a fixed disk, we will replicate it. Don't care. And the management, and I'll talk about all this stuff in probably any more detail, is trying to be as familiar and easy as possible. So we updated Failover Cluster Manager for the scenarios where you're using a cluster. So you can just enable replication through that. Or you can use PowerShell. Or you can use WMI, or you will be able to use SMAPI. That's my first secret I just let out. There'll be lots more things let out that no one else has heard today but you. And this finally lets you do something that, you know, I work on the file server team. For years we've been saying, get rid of your SANs, get a scale out file server, you're all set. We've solved world hunger. Except that we had no replication story for you, right? So you were like, well, I still have to buy this other thing. So you're not really finishing my story for me. With this And with Klaus Jorgensen's presentation that you should all go to on Friday in the morning, we're finally finishing the story. So, I'm going to start off right away. I'm a big believer in demo and proof. So I'm going to start off right now with a demo, just to show you that this is real. Okay? I have two servers here. They're very imaginatively named. And on this server, I have some files that I'm replicating. And on this destination server, you can sort of see a little bit. Here's a quick peek into the PowerShell. I have a partnership between these two boxes, and it's got a replication group that basically describes this volume I'm replicating. Not very exciting yet. And I have these files. This is just to prove that this works. So let's see. This is Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, like the world's most wealthiest man, and the president of, I think, Mexico. I couldn't find a president of Spain, sorry. So they're hanging out, being rich and popular and wealthy. Here's me. Okay. And now I'm hanging out with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. This is like awesome photoshopping. I'm just going to save this in the same spot. Ned is so awesome. Okay? So I've changed the file. There's no way I could have done that ahead of time, right? I mean, I just did it in front of you, and it's weird and odd. So if I go over here, this is my destination. I'm going to change the direction of replication so I can prove to you that when I just did that, it all magically, immediately happened. So I'm not going to do any sort of script stuff here. I'm going to actually do the real deal, which means there's plenty of opportunity for me to make a fool of myself. New source, which is the one that I'm on right now, 06. I'm a big believer in good PowerShell that lets you tab through and not have to type because I'm terrible. Even though my job is to type, I'm terrible at typing. So here's some replication group name that I had specified before. My destination is now the old source. Whoops. See, I already started typing wrong. No one called me on it. Traitors. RG01. So I have my new source. I mean, look, we're going for easy here. We're not going for cryptic. I think that a lot of PowerShell is very cryptic, and a lot of PowerShell, I think, is not awesome. I think it's kind of terrible. I want you to actually want to use my PowerShell. I want you to say, oh, this is actually easier than using the GUI. I'm going to stick with this. So new source, my source RG, my new destination. Okay? Now, check this out. You guys all seen this? This is so cool. We have this experimental tab now in the prompts where you can see behind things, and it like copies like it should have been copying for the last 20 years, and all that kind of good stuff. And Control V works. It's hard to prove that I need a camera in my hands, but Control V works. Like that is the killer feature for me in VNext. Okay, so behind the scenes, this D volume just appeared. Because we're doing replication, the source and destination, one is online, one is offline. We'll talk lots about this in the next few minutes. And here is, Ned is so awesome. So this thing does replicate. I just proved it. So whether or not you like it, it does work and exist. This is not vapor software. And I am hanging out with Bill Gates. There's proof. Okay. We have two scenarios unlocked right now in the technical preview. Everything I'm doing right now is on the technical preview, 9841. You can download this right now and set it up yourself. It's running in VMs on this laptop. It doesn't take much to run. You can do a stretch cluster, so one cluster split into multiple sites across a river, sort of. This is supposed to be Manhattan, this is supposed to be New Jersey, that's supposed to be the Hudson River. If this was correct, that would be brown and there would be nothing alive in it at all. And then server to server, just two nodes, no cluster relationship at all, don't care about clustering, I just want to replicate two servers. This is what you can do in the technical preview. There's more coming, and I'll talk about it shortly. Okay, real quick. I said block replication at the beginning. What is block replication? We're not replicating files, we're replicating data blocks. Data blocks are the pieces underneath the file system. So this is not DFSR, this is not DFSR version 3 or 2 or whatever. And that means we don't care about files being in use, we don't care about handles, we don't care about anything. It's just pushing data underneath the file system. All we care about is you writing IOs. That's it. Reading, don't care. Writing is all I care about. The way we do this, and I tried to be very international, so we have Monaco and Nice here, is above us is the volume manager, and above the volume manager is pretty much everything that you care about in the file system, like BitLocker and VSS and the file system filter drivers and all that kind of crazy junk. And then beneath all of us is the partition manager and the disk driver and the disk itself. And we are right there in the middle. We are a disk filter. And everything that comes down from the top passes through us on its way to the bottom. So we just become part of the IO stack when you enable this feature. That's all we really are. Now, people get confused and they start looking around and saying, I think I see your stuff running when I run filtmc or one of the driver filter tools. That's way up there at the top. We are way down here at the bottom. You can't see us except by going and looking in the event log or seeing the service start or one of those things. So how does this work? I got a source server, I have a destination server, I've got some kind of application or something, writing to a share or who knows. I don't care. That IO comes in and it writes, the application says, I would like to write an IO to the OS. The OS takes that IO and writes it into a log. And he takes that log entry and he sends it to the other server, who also writes it to a log, who then says, I wrote it to the log. And then your IO comes back to the application saying, it's all done. So in the normal world, there is step 1 and step 5. We add in all the other steps. After we write to our log, which is written through, it's forced to the disk that has the log on it. There's no buffering or caching anywhere in our system because that would not be safe. That is destaged under the covers in the background to the actual disk. So when you're using us, you're not writing to the disk, you're writing to the log. And then the log later is writing to the disk. This is not something conceptually that we invented. This has been the way that most replication products have worked for 20 years. We're just incredibly late to the party. And then here's my second of many beautiful animations showing the exact process as we write across to the log and come back up into the application. And then we stage what we call destaging or hardening to the actual blocks on the real data volume. Now, this is interesting. Generally speaking, we're going to make you slower, right? We just added a whole bunch of stuff. I'll talk more about requirements and that kind of thing in a second. You would expect this to make you slower, maybe a little, maybe a lot. There are some circumstances, interestingly, we have found, because we do this thing called write aggregation, where we take a bunch of your IOs and we bundle them together before sending them across and writing them down. With certain types of random writes, and certain types of applications where we can actually be faster than if you didn't have us installed. Because typically, if you were writing into HDD, if you're writing to spinning media on your data volume, that's as fast as you can go. With us, we're actually a quasi-cache because you're writing to SSD, and our log is wicked fast. It's crazy fast because we don't want to make you any slower than we have to. So I wouldn't say go and install this to get faster because you're mostly not going to be faster. But it's not going to be terribly slower in many circumstances. Now, in the technical preview, it is terribly slow. It's disgusting. Don't complain to me about the performance in the technical preview. I would use that performance metric as toilet paper. Okay, async is very similar because we have synchronous and we have asynchronous. So we have the sort of the same scenario. I've got an app writing to some server, blah, blah, blah. It writes to the log, but then it comes right back up. As far as your application is concerned, it was just like that. Came right away. In the background there, we're heading off to the destination, doing the usual thing, and bringing the IOs both back up and down into the disk. So when I do it this way, that's the change. I don't care about the latency between the servers anymore. Now, I make sacrifices to do that, that we'll talk about in a second, but if you want to go long distances, or if you don't care about total data consistency, like for you it's okay to lose a few minutes of data, then this is the way to go. Okay, so let's talk about, did you guys see the, looks like there was a, no, I'm not sure if I, yeah, this is, that is an actual snowboarding out of control monkey that is included in our presentation deck, and I had to use it because they gave me an out of control snowboarding monkey. But it will make you pay attention to these next slides, because if you sleep through the rest of this presentation, all I care about is you pay attention to the next couple slides. The requirements. You need Active Directory in this release. I won't go further than that, but in this release, in vNext, you need AD. Not because you need to update the schema or create objects in Active Directory or be a domain admin. None of that stuff is necessary. None of it. You just need it for Kerberos and security. That's it. Theoretically, you can get this running with SAM4 or some wacky MIT Kerberos implementation of your own. I'm not going to tell you how or help you, but knock yourselves out. You need, this is a soft requirement, so it's not, it will not stop you if you go less than this, a gigabit network between your servers, 1 gigabit. You can go less, I wouldn't advise it. This is the one that gets everybody, the disks. They must be initialized as GPT, not MBR. GPT has been our standard for a long time, except that it's very easy to accidentally set up MBR if you're not paying attention. Yes to JBOD, yes to iSCSI, yes to SATA, SAN, I don't care what you use for storage, those are all great because they all look like fixed disks. No to thumb drives and floppy disks and other insanity. I put these down here because I've been asked about almost every single one of them, not because I'm trying to be funny. You must have the same disk geometry, so you know you can't use a 4K and a 512E. You know, your disks have to be in the same family of configuration. You need some free space for our logs. That's a big conversation, the logs. We'll talk about that more in a second. And you can't put this on, you can't replicate your Windows folder or your Windows volume or any spot that's doing Windows. We just block you arbitrarily, okay? Finally, you open up SMB and you open up WSMAN. WSMAN is, you know, the modern WMI kind of thingy implementation. That's the only firewall ports you need. Nothing special. This is not using some raw TCP configuration. We're just using SMB as our transport, SMB 3.1. If you get anything out of this, get the requirements, especially the disks. I mean, especially the disks. Like, for example, if you create a Gen 1 VM, Hyper-V, it will use MBR disks. Because the way, this is crazy, the way that when you run disk management, the disk management snap-in, the way it decides to do MBR versus GPT is whether or not you have a BIOS or UEFI. And it's totally arbitrary. Every other tool uses GPT in the same circumstance, but disk management tool just like says, oh, you're using an old BIOS kind of thingy, you must want old MBRs then. It's arbitrary. JBOD, for those who don't know, is just a bunch of disks. This is our, I would say, preferred storage medium for all things file server or Hyper-V. Okay? So that was requirements. Please don't go past the requirements. These are the recommendations. Network latency. The first question I get asked after somebody hears about storage replica is, how far can I replicate this thing? What's the distance limitations? We do not have a distance limitation on paper. In reality, physics is a cruel mistress. And she decides what will make you slow, thanks to this thing called the speed of light. We want you to stay under five milliseconds of round trip latency. Just because we're not enforcing it. If you go over that, you're not going to suddenly stop replicating. But if we add in, remember that diagram, if I add in the log, the trip, the log, the trip, I want that trip part to be as quick as possible, because generally speaking, in the real world, it's the slowest part. And it's often the one that you have the least control over. As like, you own all the servers, you own the data center, and then there's this magical place in between called the network where things go horribly wrong. So if you stay under 1,500 kilometers and your data centers are in outer space, you can do that. The reality is it's usually around 30, 40, 50 kilometers before money, logistics, your telco, your options for fiber channel or dark fiber, all those things kind of step in. Oftentimes customers just say, I'm cool with the campus. You know, a LAN on a campus, I'm fine with that. That's great. Copper, 10 gig has gotten much, much cheaper, and metro copper is becoming kind of a real thing now. That's a new option. Your disk latency is the next piece for recommendations. And it's not that I recommend you get fast disk, because of course I recommend you get fast disk. It's a question of finding out if they are fast. We have found, if you've seen all the CPS stuff we've done, that there could be wide disparities in advertised versus actual. So what I recommend you do, as soon as you start setting up to test this feature out, don't put SR on. Take our disk speed tool, which is a free download, disk SPD, and find out how fast your disks are, the latency, the IOs per second, especially on the write performance. And then put us on and find out how much things got worse. Don't come and say it's slow if you don't know what it was like before SR, though. This is a very frequent conversation, not just for SR, but for a scale-out file server and a bunch of other scenarios we make. In the technical preview, you don't need to tell me again, it's going to be slow. And then finally, there's this log. How big should my log be, Ned? Okay, this is a very hard question to answer. A, we want your log to be on a really fast set of media, SSD, flash, something. We want your logs to be as big as you think you can get away with. Not because the size of the log makes you faster, it doesn't. It has no effect at all on the performance. The size of the log guarantees how much I can replay if your destination server goes offline. So we are capturing all the IOs into this log, and then you decide, oh, it's Patch Tuesday, I gotta reboot the destination. If it takes 30 minutes to come back up, you need to have at least 30 minutes of flex in your log to capture IOs. Or we will have to replay your data without the log. So bigger is better. Now, I don't mean bigger like your log must be 8 petabytes. I mean, we're talking about gigabyte size logs here, not massive. But figuring out the size of what it should be is going to be tricky. I give some information online right now that kind of walks you through the math. Which I hate doing because I hate people having to do math. So I'll have a little surprise here at the end to show you something we're doing soon before we ship this product to make it easier. These are recommendations, but you should kind of treat them like requirement recommendations. Okay. For async, don't care about network latency anymore. Could care less how good or bad your network is. We'll get there eventually. For disk latency, the last slide still applies. And for this, the last slide still applies. So, why should I use async versus sync? Well, no matter what, we guarantee that your volume will mount. Storage replica guarantees crash consistency, guarantees volume consistency. The way we send the IOs, there's no way for you, even with async, to end up with an unmountable torn up volume. That's priority one for us, is to make sure that we don't make things worse during your disaster. But that doesn't mean application consistency is enforced. Now, some applications actually work this way already, like SQL OLTP stuff and Hyper-V. So they're actually being very consistent by themselves whether or not storage replica is around, because they live in a world where if something just happens to the disk, they don't want to be trashed. We're not going to make you any worse. If you had a disk that used to crash or be yanked out by some chowderhead in the middle of an I.O., you'll be just, if your application broke with that, you'll break with us too. We're not making you any more consistent. We do, though, have an out, which is because we're replicating the entire volume, we will replicate VSS snapshots as well. So our async and sync technologies, our async is not snapshot based. It is still continuous, just like synchronous. The difference is just in the behavior on the network. But we're still sending data as fast as we can. In theory, your async performance could be identical to your sync performance. But under the covers, if you create snapshots periodically, we will replicate those as well. And we're keeping that consistent through the volume being consistent. So if I do one an hour, let's say one every 15 minutes, you know, obviously we're only sending along what changed. If you crash and you switch to your destination, and you had some IOs that were lost and some terrible app that just now won't open the file, you can still restore the snapshot that which you also replicated normally as if it was part of this product. But I mean, keep in mind that if you go the async route, this is the world where you can lose data. So when you're deciding, well, do I want to use synchronous or asynchronous, that's the question you really have to answer. Okay, some really good ideas, no matter what. Most of the problems we've seen during our betas and early previews and internal work, where there was something going crazy, it wasn't able to see the storage, have a problem with the storage, it was blue screening, nothing was working, was actually not SR, it was drivers being used for the storage or the network. Don't skimp on this. The CPS platform that we've built and that we're showing off down in the booths right now, we spent years going through and fixing and updating drivers, our own, vendors, everybody. Use that to your benefit. The same goes for filters. Filter drivers, as you saw on the stack, can't really affect storage replica because they're way up here and we're way down here, but they can affect your I/O performance in ways that I've had some customers say, well, I did the disk speed thing before and after, and it's faster and slower. But then it turned out they had added other drivers, filter drivers, in the meantime that made it even slower. Do you all know that Windows Defender is installed in Windows Server now by default and on by default? Oh, man, no hands at all. Oh, my God. Okay, so if you, this is right now, if you install VNext, you have an antivirus product on that server on right now. So you'll suddenly say, oh my God, this is the slowest operating system ever. No, it's not. You just happen to have something being scanned right now that wasn't being scanned before. And you can set exclusions on it. It's all very manageable. But be aware, the same way you'd be aware of some other third-party product. And then, again, learn those envelopes before and after. This thing we call micro-benchmarking is understand what your performance looks like before you start adding in all of our new junk. Okay. So the next question I get asked is, when should I use storage replica and when should I use brand X? And I have one of these many fine products, virtual machines, Sysvol in Active Directory, file servers, Exchange, SQL, other stuff. The other stuff is a big list. All these things need or have replication right now. Hyper-V replica with Hyper-V. You can use storage replica or you can use Hyper-V for the same stuff, right? I mean, it's replicating volumes or replicating VHDs. We don't really care. Hyper-V replica, great for VMs, great for VMs on SQL Server. In fact, that's where SQL Server will support you using Hyper-V replica is if you use their write consistency, write ordering. SQL Server says, yes, it's totally okay to run HVR as long as you turn on this consistency feature. We don't care. Storage replica, yes again for VMs, just like Hyper-V. Yes again for file servers. We get one advantage here is you could replicate the bare metal. I mean, you don't actually need to replicate VMs, you just replicate files. That's a nifty advantage. But I mean, we're not as good as Hyper-V replica at things that are specific to VMs. We're not as good as any replication product that's specific to an application. We are agnostic, generic, block level. So we will be good at replicating in general, great at performance eventually, and good at generic workloads. But anybody else can be better at us at the one thing that they're working on. That's just how it works, right? For SQL FCI, no. No storage replica for you. Except if you're just going to... really what they're saying right now is, we have a product that is for SQL replication. Please use it. FCI. It's not really for replication, it's for, you know, making big stretch clusters and stuff. The same goes for availability groups. Please use our stuff for SQL Server. Now, inside of a VM where it's running SQL Server, you're not really using their replication product anymore. That might be an advantage. For Exchange, they very explicitly say no. They don't even like Hyper-V replica replicating their stuff. The answer is no. For everybody, we've got to figure it out. Don't try and cross them on this. They get really mad. DFSR, great for sysvol, great for file servers, terrible for everything else. Please don't use it for anything else. And I say that as the guy who owns it. Please don't use it for anything else. And then your favorite. File replication service from Windows 2000, still around. Don't use it for anything ever. Throw it away, please, now. I don't care what you're replicating, including text files. Get rid of it, please. As far as the support goes here, I mean, I can tell you what SQL will say. I can tell you what Exchange will say. I cannot tell you what other will say. Technically, you'll find that it works. But then if you go talk to brand X, they're going to say, yeah, I don't care if it works. We're not going to support you using this. Find out from your vendor. I can't tell you. You're going to ask me. I know you're going to ask me, and I'm going to say I don't know. Okay. So that's what storage replica does. What does storage replica not do? It is not shared nothing clustering. It is not storage spaces, all local shared nothing clusters. We do have that now. If you go to Klaus Jorgensen's thing on Friday, you will see it. If you went to our storage session yesterday, you saw it. Storage replica is not a backup. If you delete everything, we will replicate you deleting everything. So, some of you have had a customer do this. All right, don't lie. Storage replica is not DFSR. Your prayers are not answered. It is not file level. It is not multi-master. It is not low bandwidth. It is not multi-endpoint. DFSR is designed for all those branch office scenarios. Storage replica is designed for disaster recovery. Now, a bunch of people have been using DFSR for disaster recovery. Now's a good time to look at this instead. Okay. Now, I was just talking about all the office stuff, just like a quick segue. Have you noticed from all the decks and all the artwork you see from Microsoft that the office looks like this? Or like, you know, awesome loft with everybody wearing Beats headphones? Or it's like this, probably in, you know, some London crazy metal and steel beautiful conference center. And then you go to work. That's what I thought. Okay, so we'll get back to the what you're paying to see. Topology, stretch cluster, server to server. We do not offer one to many in this release, and we will not offer it. It's not coming secretly at the end. No A to B to C, no transitive replication, or A to B, C to D, or any of the other crazy configurations that various vendors make. It's just server to server, cluster to cluster, stretching of a cluster, which is coming. Cluster to cluster is coming in this release. And you can even do server to self. Just pick two volumes and replicate to yourself, which sounds idiotic, right? Except it's kind of cool. You can, let's say you want to take some disks that you're going to replicate and you want to put some data on them and then send them to another site. You can use us to basically clone your disks, pop them out, throw them in the mail, they get there, and when we start replicating, we have this option called seeding that you can say, oh, this disk is already pretty close. Just do the difference. So this actually does have a real applicable piece to it. Let's talk about the one of the two things you can do right now, stretch clusters. They are only synchronous, not asynchronous. They require asymmetric storage, meaning there is two sets of shared storage, one in each site. The cluster is not really site-aware. So you have to understand that because it will look a little weird when you configure asymmetric storage in something like Cluster Administrator. He says, oh, all these disks are offline. They're not offline. It's just that your node you're talking to can't talk to them. That's okay. You can replicate CSV or PDR, physical disk, the classic disk resources of cluster. We don't care. You manage them with Cluster Manager. You can just put them with PowerShell if you want. And it's designed to increase your DR capabilities, not to increase your HA. The cluster's there for HA. So it's still a normal cluster that if you fail things around, or if you move VMs around, or if you, you know, take nodes offline and stuff, it still works totally normally. Except that now there's these disks that are actually in two spots at once. So that means that from what we make, the general use case for this is Hyper-V and a file server. Right now, not a scale-out file server. Now, you can do cluster-to-cluster scale-out file server. In fact, we want you to. But a stretched scale-out file server doesn't really, I mean, you can do it, but you won't like it. Because a scale-out file server lets you connect to any node. That's its whole point, is there's one share that's available from any node that magically gets you back to the right spot. So you'll end up magically connecting to some crappy data center 10 miles away and then coming all the way back to the one you really wanted. So don't do that. We have this UI that you should be very familiar with at this point, after it's 15 years old. And we add a wizard. I'll show you this in a second, just to simply take the existing failover cluster manager and just give you a wizard to add replication. And it's as simple as pick a source disk, turn on replication, pick a source log, pick a destination for your data, and a destination for your log, and that's it. That's it. There's nothing else. It's all over. We already changed the steps on this, so don't complain about the order, because everybody complained about the order already. I know you hate the order, so we already fixed it. And all the words are fixed, too. Let's see it. Of course. Still got me and Bill Gates here. So I have this four node cluster here. And I have a general use file server role installed just so I've got something to, you know, replicate. And I got a bunch of disks. You can see what I was talking about before. This is asymmetric. So all the disks are assigned to server one. But since two of those disks are in another site on my laptop through iSCSI, they're not visible to these two servers. So two can see two, and two can see two. And no, they can't see each other's stuff. Replication will let them see each other. So what I'm going to do is pick my role-enabled disk and enable replication. Here's my welcome page. I pick a source log. This will only show you the disks that are allowed to be used in the setup. So if you've got a disk that's, or, you know, We replicate volumes. I've been saying that for the last 30 minutes, right? But cluster doesn't know what volumes are. Cluster knows what disks are. So in the paradigms of a stretch cluster, you do everything based on disks, including us, which means making a volume as big as a disk, right? I mean, it's not that hard. So what it does is it shows you things that meet the requirements, a minimum size, the fact that it's GPT, the fact that it's in available storage. We don't want you to pick disks that are already in use for other stuff, for example, so we won't show you disks that are already being torn up by some other stuff. All I have to do here is select my disk. And you can see now that it's showing me the eligible destinations. There's several disks on here. I'm going to take the second one here. And then it picks my destination volume. That is about to be interesting. Hang on one second. Let's see if this works. So I already have a bunch of junk on there. Not a seated disk. You heard me talk about that before. This beautiful UI does not do anything right now, so don't imagine that you're getting a big effect out of this. It's not turned on in this build. Okay? What it's doing is creating a replication partnership. Yeah. See, I saw that coming. We have a bug in this release where it's not very good at math. And the math says, I want to have 1 gig of free space for my first size log. 1 gig log, we just pick an arbitrary size. Except that I already had some stuff on here when I was getting ready for it. The bug says, you need 1 gig of free, but I don't actually check to see if it's free. I show you that it's not free, but I don't actually check. And then you get to choose it, and it doesn't set up replication. So let's see if I got away with something here, because I got that error. It's going to be pretty tore up right now. Go ahead and start the roll. No, it's still in available storage. Let's do this. Let's move on, and I'll come back to this at the end and show you some other stuff with something that works. Now, if you've been to the keynote with Jeff, you saw that work. And if you've been to the storage session with me, you saw that work. So I promise you it works. Server to server. This is actually the one that most people actually set up, because if you're in a test lab, setting up a bunch of clusters and shared storage and iSCSI and zoned SANs and stuff doesn't sound very fun, but setting up just a couple of servers to see this thing works sounds easy. Server to server can be synchronous or asynchronous. It can be any type of fixed disk storage, like I talked about before, including local disks. I mean, like disks stuck in the machine, not even JBOD. You can only use PowerShell to configure it. And it's designed just for DR. It doesn't really do anything else. You have to manage everything, which is why doing a stretch cluster is oftentimes better, because it still works like a cluster. Things fail over, things come online, it's got policies and rules and thoughts. This one, if you're like your server goes, you have to go manually do everything. Enable, turn replication direction in the direction you want. Make this guy the source, make him the destination. It's all on you. It's good for file servers. Does anybody actually run Hyper-V on standalone servers without clusters? Very few people do, right? Because you can't get CSV and a bunch of other nifty features. I mean, that would work here. Most people don't do it. Again, we really want you to use cluster to cluster, because if you cared enough to replicate and have DR, you should hopefully care enough to deal with the day-to-day disasters of servers being turned off and things of that nature. Okay. The PowerShell module, and you've already seen it a few times in some of my UI, says WVR. And if you look in the event log, it says WVR. And if you look in CLU admin, it says WVR. And you're like, what the heck is WVR? That was the old code name of this product, Windows Volume Replication. Storage Replica is the new name, and if you were to get a copy off of one of my lab machines back at Redmond right now, it wouldn't say WVR anywhere, I promise you. So when you think SR, think WVR until we get the next version out, and then you can just think SR. And we'll pretend like this never happened. Two commandlets that matter, new partnership, new SR partnership, and set SR partnership. That lets you create replication and change direction of replication. That's the key. You can use get group, get partnership to kind of see what things are configured right now. If you specify nothing, it just looks at the box you're on. You can specify a computer name and have it go look at some other box. Let's do this one. There we go. You go away for now. You go away for now. So we're back to these guys right here. My mug. So I have some other volumes on here in the background that I could choose to replicate. I can also get rid of this one right now and show you this. So let's do that. I can get SR partnership. Remove SR partnership. Come on, little buddy. And all it's doing, like I said, there's nothing in AD. All this stuff is actually just stored in the registry or in the cluster hive on the machines. There's no central configuration store. There's nothing out. Yes, of course. Nothing out in some other spot you have to manage. No domain admin rights, just local administrator in this release. And I'm really trying to get us to do a delegated administrator if possible so that you don't even have to be a local admin. You could just be like a storage replica admin. We'll see if that pans out or not. That's. And then I'm going to get SR group. And you would think that I would do remove SR group right here, except now you get to see another bit of incomplete code. Is this particular one doesn't support the pipeline. Sorry. So you have to do this silliness that you're probably used to from bad commandlets. I'm in the bad commandlet category right now. Whoops. Name. Okay, it's quick. Here, let's do this. Yeah. Okay, I'm not using the keyboard or mouse. Hang on, Control V. Look how that worked. Good. So right now, this thing has no replication. No nothing. So let's create something. New SR partnership. Let me show you how easy this is. Source, okay, it's the one I'm on. Source RG, whatever, something. Source volume, let's say, what do we got here? I think we have G and F. Yeah, let's do F. I could use mount points here. I could use a volume GUID if you're an insane person. I need a log. Now the logs, you've seen me put logs in each time on each demo and I'm picking something different. You can keep using the same volume if you want. And we will also support consistency units so I can tie together a bunch of volumes to use not only one set of logs, but guarantee that if I've got five disks where I've got an application who's writing IOs all over five of those disks, they will show up in the same order on the destination server. For things like database applications who really care and really tend to spread their data across disks for various reasons. Let's see, destination. Whoops. And destination. and destination. Now, this time, I will point out that you should probably use the same drive letters between your source and your destination. You don't have to. But if your application was expecting F on one server, he's probably expecting it on the other when you come back online. And destination. And this time you'll see, unlike Clue Admin, I had to specify a log size. This one makes you decide. Right now in Clue Admin, it picks one. We're not sure if it's going to be like that when it comes out, because everybody's log size is going to be probably fairly different. 1 gig. And it's a thinking. So while it thinks, let's go over here to the destination and run, get win event. We'll stay in PowerShell for this. WVR is my event log. And my, just want to see the last 10 events. You can see it's doing stuff. It set a checkpoint. It started what we call recovery in this release, what we would call initial sync in the next release. And it's entered replication state successfully, that 5009 right there. And at this point, you can see my F volume has disappeared. That's because when we set up replication, the destination volume cannot be mounted. If you could write your on top of the file system and then we're showing up underneath it, changing blocks, we would probably make the file system very unhappy. So this is a key thing to remember when I said this is not DFSR. This is write to one authoritative copy, replicate to one non-authoritative copy until you change direction, and then he becomes authoritative. Let's see if we can put something on this disk here. And just show you that it will, right now, not look like too much of a hit. See? This is doing synchronous replication right now of all these big and small NED heads to the other side. And we can do this over here. Run perfmon. And take a look at these storage. We did manage to change the name on these at least. Storage replication statistics. And you can see stuff happening. You can see data traveling around. So let's see if I can show these at the same time with the magic of multiple windows. Yeah, there we go, see? There's the proof. The proof counters move. There you go. It's just like having a GUI. Now, what I'm going to do here in the background, while we're waiting, and now while I talk, so I'm going to blast this whole config so I can get back to my cluster at the end and show you a couple more things that are interesting. But I still have plenty to talk about, so we're okay. That was my demo of server to server. Now, you saw the simplicity of doing new partnership. I have gone and looked at a lot of other products, including our own Microsoft products, about how long it takes with PowerShell to set up replication of just about anything. And none of them ever did it in one single line. I can tell you that much. So our goal here with this PowerShell is, again, not that we make you use it because we love PowerShell or we hate you. It's because we really want you to like PowerShell. In this, you know, eventually coming world of clouds and hybrid stuff where you have lots and lots of servers running all over the place, our GUIs are never going to be good enough to keep up with that. you're going to want to really get your hands dirty in the world of bulk automation. Not all of us want to go and then end up becoming DevOps, though. PowerShell is a nice, happy medium for everybody. And if you don't like the way it works, I tell you what, not enough people complain to Microsoft about it. I mean, they complain to the internet, but they don't complain to Microsoft. If you've got a PowerShell feature that you don't like or an implementation that you find disagreeable, email me. If it's not even about something I own, I will get you to the guy who's responsible. Now, he may not care, but at least you get your chance to yell at him. Okay. So, a little bit deeper into this product. In our non-clustered architecture, we have a filter driver. Oh, and this part that says WVR is probably not going to get renamed on the files, so I'm sorry. That's our filter driver. And we have the registry storing all the data, SMB3 transporting all the actual blocks. We have our log system, which is CLFS. And we have a SIM provider. So everything that I did with PowerShell, you can do directly with WMI if you want to. You don't need to run the PowerShell. If you want to write your own automation, you can. Totally possible. The PowerShell cannot do anything that WMI cannot do. So if you want to skip the PowerShell, knock yourself out. And then we have a user mode service, which is mainly there for starting the driver, stopping the driver, listening to, you know, some pieces of automation and stuff like that. In the clustered architecture, it gets a little bit more complicated. We still have our service and our SIM provider for WMI and our driver and all that stuff. We also have a cluster resource DLL. So this thing really is totally cluster enabled. It is not some hacked up weirdness. We have a real resource DLL that listens to us and the cluster. It understands things like preferred owners and failover and policy and all that stuff that a cluster can do. It's all there. With SMB 3.1, we're getting for free a bunch of work that another team that I've worked on has been working on for, you know, 5 years, basically. So rather than writing our own transport, which was discussed at the beginning of this, we opted to reuse something which we've gotten pretty well fine-tuned at this point. It gives us some interesting options for free. Multi-channel. So the more network you give us, the more we can use them automatically. And in fact, you can turn us off using certain networks by using multi-channel. Disabling those channels. And in the final release, what we really hope to do, here's another little tidbit, is actually give you the option to say, I want to replicate on these networks, but not these networks. We'll see if that actually happens. And then you also get SMB Direct. Does anybody here use RDMA or SMB Direct? Good. That is direct memory access SMB, where the NICs are doing most of the heavy lifting, and your CPU and memory and your server is not. So it doesn't make you any faster. It makes you less slow, if that makes sense. It makes it your server can go off and do other things and not think about SMB, which is important, because this thing will kick the crap out of your networks if you let it. It's awesome. Does anybody know, like fiber channel is typically, what, 8 gigabit, right? This will do 40 gigabit, 56 gigabit. If you keep adding NICs, multi-channel will just start using them. And you can quickly create 100, 200, 300 gigabit fabrics at the cost of like commodity NICs, basically. When you're using something like Chelsea, you know, iWarp NICs, for example. You can also, with us, use InfiniBand. We'll see. InfiniBand actually, you know, has some very short range requirements as far as cabling goes, but the company that makes it, Mellanox, has introduced some very long range switching equipment they call Metro X that we're taking a stare at right now that lets them do RDMA out to 80 kilometers, which is well within our purview. You can do encryption and signing with SMB. It's built in. Most replication products I've looked at do not have any security on them at all. It's terrifying. Some of them just have like a host file with two IP addresses. And you're like, oh my God, I'm sending my blocks of data. I'm sending all my data over the network unencrypted. We can protect you. And with SMB 3.1, we've made some very significant improvements in our encryption performance And I mean like really significant. So the overhead, we hope, should not be unmanageable. A couple more little tidbits. We have a hidden disk partition, which is beautifully named 558D443C5-some other stuff. It's always named this. That's the GUID type. It will always be the same for you on every disk, on every machine you ever use. That's how you know this is the one. This little tiny guy is 516K, and he contains just what are the replication groups that are assigned to this disk. What volumes am I replicating? That's all it contains. That's tucked away on there. And we have these logs, which we don't expose up front because we don't want anybody running around in there messing around with the logs. So we hide those inside of system volume information in a folder named after the replication group. And we had to use the GUID there because you're allowed to actually call the replication group whatever you want, and it can be repeated. It doesn't matter because under the covers, the storage replicant doesn't look at the name you gave it. He looks at the GUID that he created, you know, auto-random magically. So I can have 45 replication groups on the same server all called replication group. That'll work fine. So we have to store it inside of this GUID. So if you go and get the group, it'll show you the volume and the name, and you can take that and show yourself, for what it's worth, all those logs. And for what it's worth is probably you saying, well, somebody saying, hey, there's this volume that's empty but full, because it shows no files except that it says that it's full of files that you can't see. They're all hidden system files in that folder. Right now, when you remove replication, those don't get cleaned up, which is why I had that fun with my cluster. That will be cleaned up automatically when you remove replication in the future. And then we store everything here in the registry under WVR in both the, well, in the real location, in a standalone server, and in the cluster hive in the case of doing a stretch cluster. We have performance counters, like I showed. We've improved on these a little bit since the technical preview came out. We added descriptions, for example, that might be helpful. So we used to have descriptions like, the average network receive latency is the average of which we receive network latency. And now it'll actually explain what the heck we were talking about, so you might find some use to these counters. We have event logs for everything, several hundred. My goal is that you should never have to call Microsoft with your problem. I worked in support for 8 years, mainly helping people with how bad our logging was. I want you to be able to look at these event logs and know exactly what it's doing, when it's both working and failing, and have it tell you what to do about it if it's not working. And then if that doesn't work, we have the instrumentation that only works if you call Microsoft, which every time you use that, God kills a kitten. So my angry monkey is back. Some known issues with this preview that you don't need to call me about and say, Ned, you suck. I know I suck. If I remove replication using Clue Admin, it says, oh yeah, I removed replication, and then it doesn't do anything. It'll say it worked great, and then you'll try to set up replication again, and it'll say, what are you talking about? You already got replication. I know, it's broken. Use those commands I ran, the get, pipe, remove, and it will work. PowerShell remoting does not work. So you saw me running stuff, I was doing them on the boxes themselves, and I was doing it on the server that was the primary. I was always doing it on the server who was authoritative. That you must do that right now, nothing else will work. Either it'll fail and say, oh, sorry, I couldn't do anything, or worse, sometimes it kinda works, where it's like, yeah, I got rid of half of it, or I changed half of it, which is worse, and now they both think they're authoritative, which is great. The performance, not good yet. But that's only the build you're seeing. The performance that I see right now is pretty hot stuff. You saw Failover Cluster Manager. It can be a little finicky, like you might go and choose a source and a destination, and then you click on destination, and it'll say there's no disks. And then you click back, and you click again, and it says, there's a bunch of disks. It's just a little squirrely right now. And then the name. Yes, I know it says WVR everywhere. I promise you, I spent an entire Friday 2 weeks ago going through source code, finding every spot where we said WVR and changing it to storage replica. I promise you, it's all gone. I lost a whole day on it. Everything I've talked about here is in our online guide, which I'll link to at the end. All of it is in our guide, every last bit of it. So if you were asleep the whole time, it's totally cool, and I won't tell your boss that you went to a giant conference and slept through with the presentation. Okay. The secret parts, the things that are the benefit of coming to the session. Microsoft Azure Site Recovery Orchestration is coming for this product. You'll be able to sign up to Mazur and say, I want to replicate this cluster and this cluster. Could you take care of that for me? I don't like PowerShell. It will do that for you. That is coming. Cluster to cluster itself, something that you can't do in this build right now, that is definitely coming. In fact, that is the most important scenario for me, is that you can replicate between two clusters, because that's the classic DR scenario. The performance, it doesn't matter how reliable this is or how easy it is to set it up, if it runs like crap, the performance is coming. The ease of management, we're going to make sure that our PowerShell can be remoted, that your Clue admin experience doesn't require you to sometimes jiggle the next button a little bit. Most of these things are actually already fixed. In fact, almost all the PowerShell stuff that you saw me do that was tiresome was fixed on Friday. We will have the ability for you to migrate, to export, to back up your configuration, and to put it onto other servers using PowerShell, theoretically with just an export command and an import command. And then here's the part that no one's seen, no one. This is the ability for you to go and actually take a look at your configuration that you plan to replicate, but you have not configured replication on at all. So we have this option in a commandlet that you can't see yet to generate a report. You're the first people to ever see this, ever, that will run without SR being installed at all on either nodes and tell you, you should make your log this big. You should have picked better drives because yours stink. Your network is great, terrible, or okay. You can run this thing for long durations, short durations. It will give you this nice look. Well, this is the early view of the report. It has not been hit on by the usability folks yet. It'll tell you everything about what you plan to do before you actually go and waste a lot of money trying to do it unsuccessfully. My goal is, with all management of SR, that you fail fast, not get all the way to the end and then find out, oh, this didn't work, or this is never going to work. This will be able to tell you everything you want to know, including it will actually simulate the logs themselves without having them installed and tell you your log performance, the actual network performance of sending the log message buffers, all those pieces. And you can just say, I'm just going to throw some IOs against this box and see how it looks. So I could pick a server that's being used in production right now for a bunch of VMs or for file server or whatever, and just say, watch that server and watch this other server and tell me how this is going to look when we replicate it. So rather than simulating a bunch of workloads or sitting there doing a bunch of napkin math, which is the experience you have right now, you can just say, this is a real server, but I don't want to install SR and break anything, because I don't trust you, Microsoft. Just tell me if it's going to work or not. We can do that. That's coming before we ship. I wouldn't trust me either. Definitely keep your eyes on other releases that come out. Keep your eye on the file cabinet blog. Keep your eye on TechNet. We have more content coming. We're not going to keep any secrets anymore. All the secrets are done now. We're going to keep giving you info as fast as we possibly can on what will and won't be in this product when we ship it. This guide, step by step, you can download right now. with it and a copy of the ISO, you can go and set this up in a VM environment right now and get your hands dirty, either for stretch cluster or for server to server. If you can't remember this, or if you're using an iPhone, which takes terrible pictures, just remember file cab, log, storage, replica. If I search for that using Bing, I'm sure, and only Bing, you will find the articles that talk about this product. The nice thing about storage replica right now is that it's a brand new name. It's really easy to find on the internet because there's only like 10 articles out there. And 5 years from now, this will be a disaster, but right now it's easy to find us. We have a bunch of related content. Before we get to this, let me cut back to my cluster demo real quick, because I still have a couple of minutes left to redeem myself. Let's go back to this bad boy. And what I'm going to do is configure replication real fast, and then I'm going to prove to you that if I blow away the servers, all the data will be there on the other side. So let's give it a try. Here's Failover Cluster Manager, ever so slowly. Come on, little buddy. Here's my role. Let's move him over to server one. Here's my storage. Let's move it over to server one. So you're seeing all the hidden smoke screens that you see from demos where it all works, where I don't have to do anything or set anything up. You get to see what you actually have to do now. Replication, enable. Next. At some point, I put some data on this volume, didn't I? Let's do this. I'm going to blow this thing away. I'm going to cheat. That's one thing to keep in mind. What happens to the destination volume when I start replicating to it? Whatever's on there is bye-bye. So pick wisely. This is configuring replication right now, creating a partnership. It's not actually done replicating when this wizard is done because, and if you're talking about a petabyte of data, the wizard would have to sit there for like a week. That's not a great wizard experience where you say, like, hey, nobody turn off this machine, I gotta go sleep. So replication is configured. If I go look on server three right now, who I believe is the destination, let's take a look and prove it. See this new column that just showed up? Oh, you little prick. Come back here. We have this column now that shows up that shows the source and the destination. And if I pick any one of those, because if I had like five different disks being replicated, that's not very helpful because it doesn't say which ones. But if I pick one of them, it shows the relationship down here in this well-hidden tab called replication. And it shows you the relationship. And I know it says unknown right now. That got fixed on Friday, promise. We fixed a bunch of stuff on Friday. It was a very busy day. So here's my destination. And I'm going to log in here. And quickly look and make sure that it's done replicating, because it should be. That volume is very, very small. Ha! No, thank you. Event viewer. And again, you have to remember that this is beta software, so it'll say WVR. Now, the fact that Event Viewer is incredibly slow is unchanged. It's a feature at this point. It's so old, it's a feature. Okay? It's entered synchronous replication state. So let's do this. Let's really try and piss off the demo gods. Right now, server one is the source. So I'm going to put a couple of files on here. Just some small stuff to prove that it's doing something. I chose the D drive, right? Here, I'll just new canary file. Let's make it actually be a canary. There's got a beak. Just so you show that I just did this just now. Here's my canary. Wait, these canaries are yellow, right? Okay. I'm killer with MS Paint, brother. I can do it. All right. Let's be mean. Server 1 and 2 are in my first site. Wham. Gone. Meanwhile, over here at the ranch, oh, shell. Come on, little guy. Oh, really? That's a bug. You didn't see it. Nothing to see here. Don't worry. Did I get it? Who did it go to? Did it go to 4? It went to 4. Oh. What are the odds out of 2? Thanks so much, folks. I'm out of time, but this is the last session of the day, so I'm happy to answer questions until you all leave for your typical Barcelona drinking festival. Yes? Yes. It comes down to... What we do right now with asynchronous is we send it as fast as we can. So the question is, if I've got less than 1 gigabit, and everybody, thanks so much for coming to this. Please make sure to do your survey so that if you really like me, I get to come back, and if you really hate me, you never have to see me again. Right there. So the question is, if I'm doing asynchronous, does the 1 gigabit piece still hold up? In the next version that we put this out, and before we ship the actual product, we will add an RPO dial for async that says, I don't want to be more than this many minutes out of sync. That will not start or stop replication. It may allow you to throttle I/O. It will definitely yell at you very loudly if you're exceeding it. And if you want to take the risk of going less bandwidth and just saying, I don't mind being further and further out of sync, that's entirely up to you. We only make the strong recommendation about 1 gigabit on synchronous because we know from experience that's probably going to be at least a starting spot for you. Other questions? Yes?
Has there a scenario being considered like cluster to single server?
Cluster to single server. That's a great question. There is nothing stopping you from doing that. There's nothing that we would actually be able to do to prevent it. It's not something that we are super interested in. But for a small customer, it may just be like, I can only afford to do 2 and 1. It would be possible, yes. More questions, yes.
You said that the BitLocker was higher up.
Great.
Than the replication stuff.
Yes.
So does that mean that all the data goes encrypted over the system, regardless of SMB signing and encryption?
You had a great eye on that. Yeah. So. Yes, we are actually sending across whatever the scrambled up, you know, BitLocker blocks are. Now, does that mean that this works perfectly with storage replica? Because I've replicated encrypted volumes, which are way up the stack, across. Yeah. But that other server doesn't have the key to unlock it.
No.
So you would need to have a plan in place with recovery key or setting an AD-based recovery key, you know, one of the various key providers that you can choose. So that if you have your disaster, you don't exchange it for a different disaster.
Yeah.
Yes. But it would totally work. We don't even know that BitLocker exists. technically, this is a nasty secret. I don't know what your file system is. So if you use ext4 and ZFS, I don't really know about it.
Yeah. And could you possibly get any speed gains as to turning off SMB signing and encryption when you already know that your content is?
We will definitely explore that once we come up with a good process for people to use BitLocker and actually have it be viable, because right now you'd be replicating and you think you're all great, and then you can't actually mount the volume because you don't necessarily have the key. It would require some policy juggling. Something like Azure Site Recovery would make this much easier, because it has concepts of recovery plans, which would make this much easier to do. Doing it yourself would be kind of scary, I think. But yeah, we'll talk about it when we get there. Yes. It's a great question.
Yeah, thank you.
Really good. Thanks. Yes, sir.
You mentioned about the cluster-to-cluster.
Grab her. She'll give you a mic here.
You mentioned about cluster-to-cluster replication. Is it at your scope to support multi-site failover cluster also? That is based on SAN-to-SAN replication.
So like more than two sites for stretch,
yes.
Like 3 and 4 and 5? In the whole thing we have right now is a one-to-one relationship in this release. We're trying to keep it simple because we wrote everything from scratch over the last 2 years. We made it future-proof, both in the management you'll find, in the management UI, there's nothing in there which screams this won't work with multiple sites. But for this release, we wanted to keep it in what we found from our research to be about the 95% deployment case. We definitely plan to add more servers, multi-site, all those pieces, and that is definitely something we want to do in a later release. Because even though 95% don't care, the 5% who do are real loud about it. And when they want it, they really, really want it. We know that you want it. We know that we need to give it to you. So it's not a question of if. It's just a question of when. Yeah.
Most storage providers for SAN-to-SAN synchronous replication are told us that we have a maximum 1.2 millisecond delays. About 90% of the storage vendors told us that for the delay, for the network one delays, we should be maximum at 1.2 millisecond, 1.2, 1.3.
Or 1 or 2 millisecond, 1 or 3 millisecond. Yeah, they're all over the map.
You mentioned about 5 milliseconds.
Yeah.
What about the application? Have you checked, for example, if you have four millisecond delays,
yeah,
that for the synchronous replication, that the application,
yeah,
is not impact on the application side?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you the example is when you look. I spent a lot of time staring at disk speed and staring at this stuff without SR in place, and I find very often with spinning media that it's usually double digit. So sometimes triple-digit millisecond delays long before you add storage replica on board. So I know that a lot of applications live fine in latent disks. By using SSD on our end and by keeping the 5 millisecond, what we actually recommend, and I wrote about this once in a forum post that somebody asked, is we're really trying to keep your 99th percentile average to be under 35 to 50 milliseconds total for your application to effectively experience no perceptible delay to the user. Now, if you're talking about running something on here like the New York Stock Exchange, where, as they recently wrote about, you know, milliseconds define how many millions you made that day, we probably will be very disruptive even with 1 or 2 milliseconds of delay. But for normal applications, we see the sweet spot of 35 to 50 milliseconds total end-to-end write I/O delay with all the storage and everything. The 5 seconds is manageable. What I have found, and I can't point fingers or name names, of course, but what I have found is a lot of the other SAN application products have other overhead in their product that is adding up. And so they're saying, like, your network's got to be perfect because we aren't necessarily going to be as fast as you want in other spots. And not all of them are like that. Some of them actually give much higher than 5 milliseconds. But, I mean, some of the big players really do say, like, your network should be, like, 1 kilometer. Like, they give some numbers that are very, very restrictive. And we're trying to play more in a, you know, figure out what works for you way without giving you ridiculous guidance that makes you set up for failure in the first place. Other, that's a great question. Other questions? Yes. You can shout it out. It's okay. She'll get there.
Is it possible to dedicate a specific network adapter for replication?
Right now, you can use the SMB multi-channel options to say, I don't want to use these networks. Unfortunately, I don't want to use these networks for SMB. What we plan to do in this release, we've scoped it out. We know what we need to do. It's a question of whether or not we get it out in time or if we do it as a point release, is the ability for you to say, like, this network is for SR, this network is for SMB, whatever, and these networks are for whatever's left. That is definitely something we want to do. And I have the commandlets all designed. We have the stuff all figured out. It's a question of, is there enough hours in the day? But yeah, we know about it. That was one of the very first requests we got when we started doing our first evaluations privately of this product, was I want to be able to pick my networks. So we know. That's good question. Yes. Other questions? Yes. Oh, sorry. Maybe you should get in line by the...
is it possible to make a backup from the replication disk?
A great question. So the destination is offline, which means that you're like, what do? I can't back up something, which is the volume. VSS, volume snapshot, requires the volume to be online. So right now, in this particular release, you cannot back up the destination. You back up the source. And honestly, if you want, you can back that up and then replicate that backup, either using the backup product you bought or just dumping it into some other volume which is being replicated. And if you take snapshots, if you use VSS admin, just say snapshot my disk, it actually stores that snapshot on the same volume that you just snapshotted. It's not really like a verb. That will also replicate over. So when you become the source during your disaster, your backup came over with it, basically. But no, there's no way to back up the destination while it is the actual destination. Now, what you can do, in theory, is you could stop replication, bring the volume online manually, do a backup of that, take it all back offline. I honestly wouldn't recommend that because you're adding a bunch of things that can go wrong. It is technically possible, and we've heard this one as well. What we would like to do in the future is give you the option to mount the destination read-only as a snapshot. We've been asked by several folks about this. We may or may not be able to do it in this release. I've definitely heard the feedback. And that would open up some interesting options, too. If we start adding lots of destinations and the ability to have them be read-only, you could say, oh, I want to have like a software distribution system that no one can change anything on, and I can guarantee that it always looks exactly the way I want to look. I could use this to do that. This is a very interesting scenario. We just can't do it yet. Other questions?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So the log disk, does it take the whole disk?
No. The log is actually, when we do the replication, you pick a formatted volume at that point. So that part has to be NTFS or REFS. And you will simply decide how big you want it to be. You can use our inventory tool, and it will say, if you run these many IOs that you say you're going to run, if the log was this big, it would be good for 4 days. If it was this big, it would be good for 12 days. You can decide if you want to fill it or not. It's entirely up to you. We've gone back and forth on this log thing for like 2 years. It's going to be the death of me. One of the options we were going to do was just say, fill the log of the entire disk, and then my immediate follow-up is, well, now we just move to the question of how big should my log disk be. You didn't really fix my problem, so it's going to be kind of a work in progress.
I think do what every other storage replication technology is, just pick 20%, I think, is just the general rule of thumb. Thanks.
Thanks. Other questions? Everybody wants to get off and consume alcohol. All right, thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming.